When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Totally Football League Show. Sunderland return to the Championship as the Black Cats purr at Wembley to stop Wickham's wandering. We'll look ahead to the other two finals. Will it be the Stags or the Valiants moving up from League Two? And will the Terriers make it through the Forest to return to the top flight? All those questions and more posed, some answered, in this Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Welcome in then, listener. It's TFLS on a Monday. We're looking back and looking forward. It's all about the playoffs today. Joining me, Matt Davis Adams, Adrian Clark.
Hello.
And Sam Parkin's back with us too.
Hiya, Matt.
Hello. Let's get straight to it. We're going to start today with that League One playoff final at Wembley.
It's Ruskin!
Belongs to Sunderland AFC. Back where they feel they belong for now. And maybe not too long before they're back where they really believe they belong. And that's in the Premier League. 46,000 Mackhams celebrate with Corey Evans and the players. It's Sunderland's day at Wembley. League One playoff final winners 2022. Beating Wickham Wanderers by 2-0.
So after four seasons in League One, Sunderland will be back in the Championship come August. The Black Cats saw off the Chairboys in the playoff final on Saturday, earning a 2-0 win against Wickham Wanderers. Sam, you were there and on comms for Quest. Initially, I thought this was a little bit one-sided, but on reflection and watching it back, Wickham had some really good chances in the game too, albeit not as many as Sunderland.
Yeah, they had a few. The big moment was Sam Vokes' his opportunity second half, which came from one of the few errors by a Sunderland player in the game. Bailey Wright just misjudged it. Patterson made a good save at the feet of Vokes. I just thought they didn't really supply Sam Vokes. Got in some great positions, Wickham Wanderers, in the late stages of the first half, second half, mainly down the right. I'm sure we'll come on to why that was. But yeah, Jason McCarthy, to name one, just his lack of final pull, I thought, was really evident in the game. And yeah, across the piece, I'm looking at the team sheet now, to be honest. And yeah, across the 90 minutes, I can't really pick out anyone from Wickham who was kind of a 7, 8 out of 10. Maybe Anthony Stewart, maybe Joe Jacobson. And across the board for Sunderland, that was a really good performance under that pressure. I thought they were by far the better side, deserved their victory, and just didn't really happen for Wickham on the day. And yeah, Alex Neil definitely got his team right, got his tactics right, and deserved victors.
Man of the match, wasn't he, Alex Neil? Clarkey, that one change that he made, bringing Elliot Embleton in, paid off 12 minutes into the game.
Yeah, it was a good day for him. It's been a good spell for him, hasn't it, really? Just one defeat since he took over. So yeah, no, he had an excellent final. It was a bold call, wasn't it? Because they were good, really, across the two legs against Sheffield Wednesday. It might not have been the most thrilling of playoff semi-finals, but they were tactically sound. So to change that for the final was quite adventurous of him. He did say, didn't he? I don't know if you caught this. He said that he watched back the two games against Wickham from the regular season. And he said Elliot Embleton was unbelievable in both the games. And he just took the viewpoint that certain players like playing against certain opposition or are well suited to hurt them. And it worked well. I think what happened here was Wickham's fullbacks like to sort of man mark. They like to get really close to the wingers. And And Embleton's positioning, just sort of on the left coming infield, just asked big questions of Wickham. They weren't really sure how to deal with him. And we saw that for the goal, a little bit of hesitation there, and away he went. And yeah, it was an excellent team that Neil put out. And I concur with Sam, very deserved winners. Under huge pressure, Sunderland, you know, all those fans turned out. The weight of expectation, the need to go up, was massive, but the players perform with real confidence. And I do give Alex Neil the credit for that, because he gave them the platform. He's matured them from a tactical perspective in the few weeks that he's been there. And yeah, they cruised it, really.
Just on the Embleton and the tactical setup, me and Paul Walker, the commentator, had that moment, obviously, when we got the team sheet. Didn't really know how they were going to be setting up Sunderland. Was it going to be a back three, a back four? And then the early stages of the game, he was so central, Embleton, as Clarkey said, and that actually led to the goal. So I think that actually enabled Wickham to get loads of joy down their right-hand side, because essentially they weren't playing with anyone wide. And therefore, in the first half, McCleary and McCarthy had loads of the ball. So it was kind of risk and reward. And of course, you commend Alex Neil for that change, and he got the goal, but it didn't come with its flaws in that first half. But it was a massive decision, because it was the big discussion point. No Jack Clark, Elliot Embleton in from the off. How's that going to shape up? And obviously it had a major factor on the game, but it wasn't with its hairy moments, I suppose, in the first half. But he's different from, you know, Pritchard and Roberts are those orthodox number 10s, getting pockets, tricky. Embleton's more of a box-to-box. He's a bit of a ball carrier, very determined type. And yeah, he had a really good game, and it was a massive call from Alex Neil, and he got it right.
Pritchard too, right, Clarkey, both assists. Bold to go with two number 10s in a team, but again, another move that paid off from Alex Neil.
Definitely, yeah. Pritchard is a technician, isn't he? You always get the feeling he could be a big game player, and he's really thrived, hasn't he, since Alex Neil took charge. Yeah, I think again it boils down to the fact that because he set them up so well organized, such sort of defensive discipline, they've improved so much without the ball from the back into midfield, that you don't need Alex Pritchard to be back at left back or back at right back or, you know, deep inside his half too often. You can have him getting into those positions where he will affect the game. And that's how they've used him. And he's, yeah, obviously current form gave him the confidence to really revel on that big stage. Yeah, he was class, wasn't he? Patrick Roberts was pretty good again, as he was across the semi-finals. So, yeah, it was outstanding from Sunderland.
Dennis Sirkin, a little lucky to stay on the pitch, Sam. Bit of a nasty tackle after he'd already been booked.
I didn't think so. No, I thought the first one was a yellow. I thought that there was minimal contact on the second one. I think because of the close proximity between the two challenges, the Wickham players appealed. But no, I thought McCleary almost anticipated the challenge and then went down a fraction late. So that would have been incredibly harsh.
Yeah, on the game, I think that Wickham didn't do what they normally do well enough. The premise really of Wickham's style of play and their success is that they're a nightmare to play against. That you just, yeah, that they make it the type of match that they want it to be, rather than let it flow. And they, I don't know if it was stage fright, fatigue. I'm really not sure what it was, but they were just a yard, maybe 2 yards off. And we saw that, didn't we? I mean, even with the goal, the two goals actually, Tafazzoli backing off for the first goal, the midfield left wide open from that sort of attack. That's not like Wickham. You can obviously look at the keeper, but I think Tafazzoli was a bit caught up in the headlights early on in the game. And then Stewart, wasn't it, for the second goal. Normally Wickham's players are like on attackers, not giving them a sniff, but he's about 2 yards away, and that was too much really to allow to Stewart. So I think there'll be regrets from Wickham's end, whether it was they got Wembley sort of jelly legs or not. I'm not entirely sure, but they didn't produce the type of tactical performance that they can.
We'll talk more Wickham shortly, but very pleased to say joining us now to talk Championship Black Cats is our friend and Sunderland keeper coach David Priest. David, talk us through the experience of Saturday. Had you actually been on the Wembley turf before?
No, I think the last time I was at Wembley to watch a Coldplay, that's as close as I've got to it. So, but just from start to finish, it really couldn't have gone any better. I think the biggest fear when you're going to games like this, and that was certainly was one of mine when we had the two games against Sheffield Wednesday, was that, you know, how the players would handle it. And I think everyone saw that over the course of those three games, were probably the best three performances of the season so far. And a lot of that was down to how the players handled the occasion and sort of just playing the game rather than the all the hullabaloo around it. The massive credit goes to them for the way that they handle themselves and the way they allowed themselves to perform.
I guess that level of control as well comes from the gaffer too, doesn't it? There's a big read-up on The Athletic today profiling Alex Neil. It's called Alex Neil, Sunderland's quiet, low-key, no-bullshit saviour. Is that an accurate summation of your boss?
I'd say so. Very much a case of he does what it says on the tin. It's been a bit of a turbulent season sort of for a lot of us at the club, and I think you've just got to adapt to what happens. We've spoken about before about changing manager, and you know there can be some insecurities come around with that. But with Alex coming in, he's just been very inclusive with everybody. You know, I think coming in after the transfer window helps a lot for people to get focused. You know, you've got this group of players, you've got this staff, this is how you've got to work, you've got this to work with, and he's just gone on with it. And the biggest thing for me is how he's approached each game individually. You know, there's been no real overlap of the games that we've played so far. Every game sort of been boxed away very quickly, and we moved on to the next one and sort of analysed the life out of each opponent. And it's bore fruit, obviously.
Yeah, Preecy, congratulations, mate. Fantastic performance, I thought, at the weekend. A lot has been made about the platform, the defensive platform that Sunderland have built and created since Neil came in. What's the work that goes on behind the scenes in reality? What is the secret to that? Is it hours on the training ground going through shape, or is it, you know, classroom stuff? Just give us a feel for the level of preparation that he and you guys, the rest of the staff, put in.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it's around around, like I said before, about the approach to each game individually. Unless you've got the very top players like Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola have got, you're almost trying to accentuate what you're good at and try and hide what you're not good at. And if you can do those both parts, then you've got a great chance. And I think the gaffer, as soon as he came in, the first thing he's identified is that we conceded far too many goals. We played some great stuff at times over the course of the season before he came in, but we were that did leave us very open at times. And certainly from the first couple of games, he could see exactly what the problems were. And first and foremost, we're leaving ourselves open when we had the ball. So when we were attacking was probably when the other teams were the most dangerous. And there was a big focus went into that to making sure that we not go ultra defensive, so we make ourselves too hard to attack, but just a case of if we've got the ball that we keep it sustained attacks, and so the more we're around their box and the more we can lock them in, obviously the less chance they have of hurting us as well. So it really was a case of, I know it looks like from the outside maybe it's we've gone a little bit more defensive. But his approach really is that, you know, attack's the best form of defence. And like again, it's bore fruit for us.
Back to Saturday, what about those Sunderland supporters? I mean, absolutely tremendous. I'm sure you could say it added another layer of pressure, but the support was so good. I mean, a word on that. And also, were you tempted to head off to Trafalgar Square on Friday night?
It was absolutely incredible. Honestly, these people, man, are just... Yeah, I mean, I know what they're like. I was born here and I've experienced before in the past, but it was like a whole different level. I missed out while I was playing on the sort of Premier League years with Kevin Phillips and Roy Keane, that sort of era. I didn't watch a lot of the games then, didn't manage to get a lot of the games because of my own career. But certainly, it really reminded me of being back in Rock Park, the atmospheres that we used to create there. And there's probably half as many people inside Roker Park, less than half, than was in Wembley on Saturday, but they still managed to create that same sort of atmosphere that you got in a small stadium like Rutter Park in a cavernous place like Wembley. And we saw it all Friday night, you know, sat in the hotel and just after dinner, and you're getting sent all the pictures through of Trafalgar Square, and you are tempted just to jump in a taxi and get yourself down there, like, you know. But I think that's what's most pleasing about it all. And all the players recognise this. I mean, we've got Lyndon Gooch, who's, you know, he's American, born on the west coast of America. He's been here for 10, 15 years on Sunderland. And he just gets it as well. He is a Macam to all intents and purposes. And people like him recognise how much it means to the people. And just seeing and reading on Twitter and social media about how people think it's the best day they've ever had as a Sunderland fan, that means just as much as the promotion itself.
Congratulations, Preecy. Obviously saw you by the tunnel with your warm can of Budweiser, keeping it real. Big question, though. How was the party afterwards? And did you, I'm going on social media here, what I've witnessed, did you make it to the West End nightclub? If so, what did you think of the sparklers in the champagne?
Well, do you know what? I'm old now. I'm well past that. But I still don't think the place we ended up on Saturday night would have been my cup of tea 20 years ago, to be honest with you. But you know what? It didn't matter where we were. We went back to the hotel afterwards. All the staff from the club were there. All the families were there. And yeah, we did manage to make it on elsewhere later on. But it didn't matter where we were. It didn't matter the surroundings, who else was there. The most important people were there, all the players, all the staff. And it was almost like we're just now a little bubble just celebrating together. And it's brilliant just to share those sort of experiences with such a great group of lads. You know, it's easy to say that afterwards and you caught them not in the euphoria. But as characters and personalities go, you know, you couldn't get any better than the group we've got at the moment. And yeah, it's just brilliant to share it with them.
Finally, David, was that the best moment of your career on Saturday? I know you played and everybody always says you can't beat playing, but I mean, to get promoted at Wembley with your boyhood club's got to be right up there, surely.
By far, it exceeded by far anything that I'd ever done as a player as well. It's such a strange experience because I thought it would be so overwhelming and that I couldn't believe it. And everything just felt right. And I managed to keep together on the pitch. I almost broke a couple of times. Got back in the dressing room where the coach's room was for my missus, and then I went. So I must have spent a good 5 minutes just breaking down the phone. I didn't say a word, just getting it all out. And I'm glad I did because it allowed us to celebrate like I did on Saturday night. And then, of course, the half comes with it as well, didn't it? Yesterday morning, I was an absolute wreck. I know that.
Expect it any other way, particularly if you're drinking Budweiser all night. Goodness me.
We soon got the champagne. Don't worry about that.
Good stuff. Listen, thank you so much for joining us and previewing the final and then reviewing it too. We're really pleased for you and hopefully we'll speak again next season when you're in the championship.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks a lot for that.
David Preece there. On Wickham then, Adrian, Gareth Ainsworth been linked with QPR. He said after the game he'll stay at Wickham as long as they want him to, which, I mean, I guess is as long as he wants, essentially, given what he's done there. They well placed it to challenge again next season. Obviously, no Akinfenwa, but he was kind of a bit part player anyway. You wouldn't imagine that their squad's going to be raided over the summer?
No, and I think they're very well placed to go again. Yeah, I remember him speaking when they qualified for the playoffs and he was talking enthusiastically about the points tally and how impressed he was with it and that he doesn't want to make big changes, even if they don't go up. He thinks this group is capable of at least matching, potentially exceeding their points tally next season. So, yeah, I don't think there'll be major changes at Adams Park unless another team really caught him and tempted him with an offer, I guess. And then you do worry about Wickham and what might happen moving forwards. But yeah, I think it'll be more of the same. And I think there'll be, still a nightmare to play against next season in League One.
Finally on this game, Sam, Adebayo Akinfenwa, the kind of narrative around the end of the game was, well, no fairy tale finish for Akinfenwa. And I'm thinking, he's 40 years old in his last games at Wembley. That's quite a fairy tale in and of itself, no?
Yeah, it is. Do you know what? Commentating on the game, I was really surprised he came on when he did. I think he came on with about 20 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And not only that, but he put Hanlon on at that point as well. Lewis Wing as well. I mean, he had all his offensive options on there, apart from maybe David Wheeler, who I was disappointed, you know, as a former teammate of mine, didn't get on. But he went for it early, Gareth Ainsworth. So credit to him. And for about, what, it was probably only three, 4 minutes, they rocked a little bit, Sunderland. They got balls into Akin Fenway. He didn't necessarily get hold of them, but his sheer presence did cause a little bit of panic. But no, I mean, he's gone on 4 or 5 years longer than I anticipated him going on. But again, he's one of these players, Akin Fenwa, who I played against latterly in my career. If you get the right type of balls into him, it is physically impossible to get the ball off him. So it just gets you up the pitch, brings people in. His touch is better than people would give him credit for. Very similar to someone like Peter Crouch. Different frames, of course, but the same outcome. You get it into his chest, centre-halves just can't get round you. So they've got to let you have the ball. So, I'm sure he's not too disappointed. He will be, you know, in the short term, but a great way to go out. And yeah, I don't imagine we're going to see him possibly sticking to football. I think, he's probably going to be involved in bits of other things, probably on the television, I would say.
Yeah, Bayo, if you're listening, don't sign a WWE contract without consulting me first. It is a political minefield, that place.
He'd beat Grant Holt, wouldn't he?
So that was the League One playoff final. Many congratulations to Sunderland. Commiserations to Wickham. We'll see you in the third tier again next season. All right, this is our only show this week, which means we've got a couple more playoff finals to preview, and we'll do that next.
Place your bets. Welcome to Pep Roulette.
Ciao, lad. Feeling confident today, me.
And your selection?
To start up front, blue number 9 and 26, 17 as well, just behind the front two, like.
Excellent. Good luck. Blue number 7, unlucky, sir.
Oh, still, and he started last week.
Predicting Pep's lineups is hard, but fortunately, we've made our bet builder easy. Simply choose a top pre-built bet builder, click add to bet slip, select your stake, and done. Paddy Power.
Online exclusive. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Sunday at 4:30, the Championship playoff final between Nottingham Forest and Huddersfield Town goes down at Wembley. Two-time European champs haven't been in the top flight since 1999 and haven't played at Wembley for 30 years, whilst Town are looking to return to the Premier League after a 3-year absence via the same method from which they gained promotion back in 2017. As it should be, Sam, it's a tough one to call this. Only a point between them, 2 points rather, between them at the end of the regular season. Traded away wins. Forest knocked Huddersfield out of the cup in the fifth round. How do you call it, though? I mean, it's going to be decided on fine margins, you might say.
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult, this. There's not a great deal between the two sides. It's great that we got the two form sides. I think over the last 12 games, the best two teams in the division. Huddersfield have had an incredible run, I think, since the March international break. 7 wins in 9. It's very difficult. I think Huddersfield might take a lead from the Luton game, a couple of the other games latterly in the season, and just sit off a little bit. Maybe just allow Forest to have a bit more of the ball than maybe they're comfortable with doing so. And then they can counter through Sorba Thomas. Yeah, I think that's how I see it going. With the two up front that Forest invariably go with, Huddersfield normally play three centre-halves, and I don't think they'll be particularly high. I think they'll want to cut off that space for Brennan Johnson, Jed Spence, and the striker who he goes with. And yeah, that's the way I see Huddersfield setting up, and it's probably going to be up to Forest to find a way to break them down if they're going to have a bit more of the ball. And I'm not saying they can't do that, but that's not where they're at their best. But yeah, I just think you look at all the statistics, both pretty similar, you know, in terms of keeping hold of leads and coming back to win from losing deficits. Set pieces, Huddersfield, we know are really strong, but Forest don't concede many in that regard. So I don't see that maybe being as strong an avenue for Huddersfield as normal. So very, very difficult to call.
Selection dilemmas for both, Clarkie. Thinking particularly about Huddersfield, Sauber Thomas has signed a new contract, had to make do with coming off the bench in both the semi-finals. Would you expect him to start here? And I guess the other one, Danny Ward back in training, does he get picked ahead of Jordan Rhodes? Obviously got the goal that got them to Wembley.
I think so. Yeah, I think if they're both fit and available, Danny Ward starts and Sauber Thomas starts. Yeah, that's how I would see it. I think, yeah, it'll be a back three. I think it'd be a 3-4-2-1 for Huddersfield. They'll look to have the sort of extra man advantage in midfield. So, you know, outnumber Nottingham Forest there. Forest will go with the 3-4-1-2, as we know. And yeah, it's gonna be fascinating. Yeah, because Forest are at their best on the counters. We know that. And if Huddersfield do sit in and say, come on then, come and have a go at us, then Forest have got to come up with something new. I just think there's some great matchups all over the pitch, not least with the keepers, the two respective keepers. Excellent, aren't they? Nichols and Samba. So one of them could easily be the hero. I'm looking forward to seeing Toffolo against Spence. I think that's a really good matchup. Toffolo's ended the season brilliantly. And I was looking back at some of the quotes from Steve Cooper from the match where they lost at home to Huddersfield. And the goal came from the left, from Toffolo, I think, for Dwayne Holmes. And he said, we worked on it all week. We knew they've got great quality from that side. So I'm really annoyed that that's how we conceded. So that will be part of their thinking again, stopping Toffolo. Maybe Lewis O'Brien will sort of arc his runs out there to make 2v1s on Spence, just to peg him back a little bit. That might come into their thinking. Lots of tactical sort of, yeah, duels to look out for. By the way, in that game that Forest lost, they had 23 shots. So, you know, that will give them encouragement. They didn't play badly, I don't think, on the day. So, yeah, look, yeah, how Forest press will matter, won't it? I think that's... Forest are brilliant at counter-attacking, but they're also good at pressing inside the opposition half. How good they do that in this game might determine how they fare, I suspect. So, yeah, and Sam's right about set pieces. Forest are very good. Only Fulham have let in fewer set piece goals than Forest. So you should back those three centre halves to deal with it. But yeah, you never know.
Clarkie touched on it a little bit, but I think Sauber Thomas, if he plays on the right hand side up against Colback and McKenna, especially what happened in the second leg, both Sheffield United's goals came down that side. That's probably as slack as I've seen McKenna with and without the ball. He looked like a little bit of a weak link in that semi-final. So, and ultimately, it seems like the obvious thing to say, but Johnson for Forest against Thomas for Huddersfield. I think Sauber Thomas, arguably over the first 10, 15 yards, is incredibly sharp. Maybe Johnson over a longer distance, but I think whichever one of those is on it at the weekend, that could be the defining factor.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. I had to have my list of things to bring up. Colback, McInnes, possible weak link, ? Sheffield United definitely identified it. No question about it. And they made them suffer. And Huddersfield are good down the wings, aren't they? They put in excellent ammunition as well for Danny Ward. So they have to tighten up down that side. How do they do that? It's a big question mark. Who slides across? Is it the midfielder that slides across, or are they going to ask a Brennan Johnson to do more of a defensive job at times if he comes on that left hand side? I don't know. Will they be bold enough to leave two up front if it means Colback's going to get isolated up against potentially Sauber Thomas? So yeah, the bookies have Forest down as overwhelming favourites here. You know, heavy odds on. Just don't see it that way, I'm afraid. Sorry, Matt. I'm sure you agree. I think this is a really close match to call.
It's got to be the biggest nightmare in the EFL right now for any management team preparing to play against Huddersfield, because you just haven't got a clue how they're going to line up and in game as well. I mean, I think the last five games of the league season, he played five different shapes. And I saw a couple of them. And you're trying to do your prep and you're trying to come up with something analytical before the game. But essentially, you can't really make your mind up until 90 minutes have played out, because he's throwing curveballs in all over the place.
Yeah, stopping John Russell as was the story, one of the stories of what Luton did in the semi. So maybe that's something they can do. That's if Russell plays. It wouldn't surprise you if he went with something else, you know, just because it's core brand and he likes to mix things up. I was looking at the records of the teams against the top six this season, across the season and the playoffs as a whole. And it is Huddersfield that have the better record. 1-5, drawn 3, lost 4. Forest 1-3, drawn 3, lost 6. But a few of those were pre-Cooper, it has to be said. So, yeah, if there is an edge to be found, it's Huddersfield in those sort of big match play situations have done pretty well so far this season. Forest, just have, from Forest's point of view, Matt, you have to just pretend it's an away game, don't you? I know it kind of is in a sense, but Forest have been probably more comfortable as an away team over the course of the season.
This is all making me feel rather ill. Let's get some predictions then. It sounds like it's going to be Huddersfield in the Premier League next season from what I'm hearing here. Is that who you're going for, Sam?
No. I think Forest will win. And do I think Forest will win? No. I'd prefer Forest to win. And I'm not going to make any excuse for this. And there'll be a narrative this week about all the people in the media. Everyone wants Forest to win. I grew up watching Forest in the Premier League and playing in cups, and they've not been there for so long. Huddersfield had a go a few years ago. And listen, I love going to Huddersfield, and I've got enormous respect for Corberan. Love Harry Toffolo. He's one of my favourite current players. Lovely bloke. But of course you want to see Forest back there. And that's not because I've got you, Matt, and I've got two supporting Forest friends. Does that make any sense? They're both called Ed, which is weird in itself, and both live in London. But yeah, I think all the neutrals are going to want the romance of Forest being in the Premier League, and we shouldn't feel bad about that.
So that's the want. What about the logical part of your brain, Clarkie? It sounds like you think Forest have got a fair bit to do.
No, I just think it's even. I think we haven't really talked about Forest and, you know, the tools that they've got to dismantle anybody. So you have to respect that, and Huddersfield will. I think there'll be one goal in it. Could be 1-0, could be 2-1, could go to extra time. But I think Forest have got the more match winners. I think Johnson and Keenan Davis and Sam Surridge could make the difference. We saw Sunderland, didn't we? Up against a team that really, a Wickham team that obviously have weapons, but they're better at disrupting the opposition, at nullifying them. And it was the talent that came through. It was the star names. I think that might happen here. I do. I think if Huddersfield drop a couple of percent below their usual style, then Forest can make them pay. Yeah, I think you're going to win this 1-0.
I'll go draw. Pens.
Oh, God, no. Not that again. Although we do have Bruce Sandler.
And I'm with Sam. I make no apology for it either. I think Forest, good luck to... If Huddersfield win, wish them the best of luck. Congratulations. It's an unbelievable achievement. But I think a better addition to the Premier League would be Nottingham Forest, for colour, for tradition, you know, heritage, and actually for the way they attack the opposition. They really, you know, I think they'll be quite good to watch next season, Nottingham Forest, if they get into the top flight. So yeah, I'm supporting them too.
Thank you. We'll see what difference that makes. Sunday at 4:30.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. If you want to read more Football League content from the likes of Nancy Frostick, Paul Taylor, Phil Buckingham, Peter Rutzler, and more of The Athletic's best writers, you can do so by heading to theathletic.com/league show and get yourself a subscription of just £1 a month for the next 6 months. That's theathletic.com/league show.
24 hours prior, the League Two final will take place between Port Vale and Mansfield Town. We'll talk about Port Vale first. Sam, you were on hand at Vale Park for the second leg of the semi against Swindon. Unfortunately, it was more about what happened in the post-match than what happened on the pitch here. Just give us an in-person perspective of how that pitch invasion was to experience.
I felt incredibly flat last Friday, and it wasn't because Swindon had been knocked out necessarily. Yeah, it wasn't the result that I would have wanted being a former player. But yeah, it was really awful to watch firsthand. And I don't know what's happening at the moment. I'll try and articulate it as best as I can. But I think the lead up to that game hadn't didn't help. I think there was a bit of animosity between the two sets of fans, the social media sparring, who sold the most tickets, blah, blah, blah. So there was that kind of undercurrent. And then there was the McCurdy theatre. And I don't think that helped either. Obviously, he was the difference in the first game. And listen, Port Vale were going to play on that. They were going to intimidate. They came out in numbers. It was a very, very vociferous crowd. Absolutely no problem with that. But I think that, yeah, that was a little bit of a sideshow. And obviously, there was a few things thrown at him. And they're just, he had such a poor game on the night. It was written that he was going to miss that penalty. And me and Matt Taylor were speaking off air. Fans are going to go for him because there was that type of tension, that type of atmosphere, and exactly how it played out. And, you know, I'd never sit here and finger point at Port Vale fans because every club in this country right now seems to have a problem. But I think it's probably driven a little bit by social media and that inability to just go and support your team and then just say, do you know what, it wasn't our night, rather than the finger pointing and all this. And I heard Darren Ambrose speaking about it last night on the radio, and he spoke about Hillsborough, the big Crystal Palace game when I think they had to win to survive, and there was a pitch invasion. And he spoke about how unsafe he felt. I presume it was Wednesday fans that, you know, he felt unsafe from. And all this finger pointing came back at the Crystal Palace fans, if they hadn't come on then. And it just seems to be so much of that right now, rather than just taking responsibility for your own actions. And I come away from Thursday, honestly, just thinking, what has happened to this game? And people are saying now, listening to this, oh, go and watch rugby or whatever. But, you know, I've been going to football matches for 35 years and I've seen pretty much everything I think there is to see in football. You know, skirmishes on and off the pitch, following, you know, teams abroad. There's just something at the moment, just celebrate, you know, your own team's successes rather than focusing on the opposition, because the cameras picked up very little. I would say there was, understandably, there were skirmishes, and I would say every Swindon player on that pitch and the ones that weren't even in the 18 and not even stripped, there were skirmishes, you know, across the piece there. So yeah, they're going to have to get a hold of it. And I think you have to channel your energy. We spoke about it last week. You have to channel the resources on protecting the players, whether that means changing where they stand for the penalty shootouts, just getting security or police to funnel the players that have just been beaten off the pitch. It's sad that we've come to that, but that's got to be the first thing they do. And then stopping people encroaching onto the playing surface. And there has to be a technology there to have some kind of barrier. If it's something that's tucked away and they can bring it up just before the last 10 minutes of a game or whatever, I think we've reached that stage now because, you know, players are in clear danger.
Let's move it on to the final then. Port Vale won one of their last four in the regular season. Stags won four of their last six, all told. That includes the playoffs. Does that give Mansfield a bit of an edge, Clarkie, or does that not particularly matter coming into this
game? I don't think it matters too much, to be honest. No, I think that two very evenly matched sides. I was impressed with Port Vale in the first half of that game against Swindon. Obviously had chances, quite a few chances, didn't they? Wilson missed an absolute sitter as well, didn't he? They looked a handful, but Mansfield have got good players up front. They showed the other side of their game, Mansfield, in the match I saw at Northampton, where they dug in a sort of 4-5-1 and yeah, showed great bravery, really, to see the job through. So, yeah, Nigel Clough against Darryl Clark. Nigel Clough's got a bit more experienced. I think he showed real nous over those two legs against Northampton. Did a bit of an Alex Neil, changed one or two key players, changed a winning side to adapt to that semi-final. And I think he'll do that for the final as well, Nigel Clough. So I give a slight edge to Mansfield, but it's going to be close.
You the same, Sam? Thinking it's just Mansfield? Have they got that bit more depth to their squad, potentially? Clarkie talked about those options and changes. You know, we saw Matty Longstaff not starting the second leg. You probably expect him to come back in, but they do have options in pretty much every position.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, you look at the results this season, you know, Port Vale beat Mansfield 3-1 at home. It was 1-1 at Field Mill, and by all accounts, Mansfield absolutely battered Port Vale on that day. I think Darryl Clark said as much. That was the one of the toughest experience of the season, and they got away with a 1-1. So I don't think maybe the scorelines completely reflect the games as such. Again, I think Mansfield probably more of the ball in this. I think Port Vale, yeah, will probably give up a little bit of possession, but they're powerful. We saw, as Clarkie said, the first half an hour, I've been there countless times. I saw Clarkie as when you cannot get out and the ball looks like a golf ball when it's coming into you. The crowd were up. I mean, it's going to be difficult for Daryl Clark and Port Vale to replicate that at Wembley because of a bigger pitch. Vale Park's a big pitch, but the pressure, the occasion, you're not going to be able to play on the front foot in that manner. That was like just relentless, and Swindon were caught in the headlights. So I was really impressed with them. I suppose up front, if they had a fit Proctor, I think that does a lot, really. We're talking about probably a little bit of a rookie coming in, Edmondson or Harrop, who played the other day and I thought did brilliantly. And I was surprised that Daryl Clark took him off too early. But in a general sense, I probably just see more threats in Mansfield's team. The set pieces, they score a lot. They do concede a lot, but Hawkins always good for a goal. McLaughlin, the left back, is 17 goal involvements. And then you've got Oates and Bowery. And I'm looking at Port Vale, Garrity and Wilson. They're the only real two that I think could get you a goal right now. So for that reason, I'll go for Mansfield. And finally, Daryl Clark, yeah, inexperienced in comparison to Nigel Clough, but two promotions, I think, with Salisbury, certainly playoff campaigns, and a successful one with Bristol Rovers at Wembley. So that may come into play.
More big match experience in Mansfield's team, isn't there? Definitely. Like McLaughlin's played in a lot of big games. Hawkins, O'Toole has been around. Perch, Quinn, Longstaff's been a Premier League player. So yeah, you look around their side, Aikens, if he plays, he's played in some big games. So yeah, if that's an advantage, then Mansfield have it, don't they? Just be interested to see whether they go back to their 4-4-2 diamond or whether they stick with more of a sort of 4-3-3 that turns into a 4-5-1 Mansfield on the day. But Port Vale will test them, won't they? They'll be direct. They'll be really powerful, and they'll ask a lot of that Mansfield rear guard. On a personal note, I'm looking forward to seeing Worrell, the right wing back, against McLaughlin, the left back for Mansfield. Two ex South End players, two guys that, yeah, were underappreciated potentially at Roots Hall. They were excellent, I thought, down there, and it's good to see them still knocking around at League Two level and thriving.
4 o'clock kickoff for that one on Saturday. We'll react to it on Monday, of course. So that's what we think. What about Paddy Power? Let's bring in producer Abby. She can give us some odds on those playoff finals.
Yes, Matt, it's the time of truth. It's truth-telling time. It's Paddy Power's odds. Good news, Forest are the favourites. They are 21-20 to beat Huddersfield, who are 13-5 with a draw 21-10. However, we know it's going to be a nervy game, and it looks like, or there is at least a chance that it could go all the way to extra time and penalties. Unfortunately, Paddy Power have got odds for that. So if you expect either team to win it in extra time, that's 5-1, or either team to win it on penalties, that's 4-1. Things do look a little bit better though for Forest when you go into the details on each one of those. Forest are equally likely to win it in extra time or in penalties, that's 17-2. Huddersfield on pens is 9-1, and Huddersfield in extra time is 12-1. As for the Saturday show, that's the Mansfield versus Port Vale event. Both teams are 13-8 to win that game, and the draw is 2-1. Paddy cannot separate these teams, and in fact, both teams are odds on to be promoted. Port Vale, though, the more likely. They are 4-5 with Mansfield 10-11. I say more likely, tight. It's tight between these two. So it looks like we're in for two very tight, very nervy, but very exciting games.
Thanks, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Right then, before we go, our friend Nick Miller has a piece up on The Athletic about how to deal with nerves ahead of a big game. And of course, that brings to mind the big game on Sunday at which I will be in attendance. So give me some tips. What should I be doing? What do the pros do? I'll give you a little insight, Clarkie. Tuesday last week, before the second leg of the Sheffield United tie, managed to wash two cars inside and out, hoover the house and mow the lawn during the course of the day, for which my wife was incredibly grateful. My step count was through the roof, but it didn't do anything to calm my nerves. So is it just drinking from dawn? What can I do here?
Yeah, I don't know. But if you drink too much, you get a bit over emotional, can't you? So yeah, it's tough. I think on the lead up to the game, yeah, distraction technique is probably the best. I've always been quite relaxed about football. I've never been overly nervous. What I would do, I don't know, it sounds wrong. You might do this anyway. I'd probably have a little, I'd have a gamble on, I'd have a jinx bet on the other team. I'd have Huddersfield to go through, to get promoted to the Premier League, to cover the price of my ticket at least. So you knew that at least you had something to soften the blow should it all go a little bit pear-shaped. That's what I'd do probably in your shoes. But it's up to you.
I'm thinking, Sam, of a kind of, well, it'll be nice to have a day out at Wembley approach, because I think I got a bit too worked up last week and it shaved a couple of years off my life. So maybe, I don't know, surround myself with people who don't like football who can tell me that it's just a game.
Yeah, I think there's something in that. I think, yeah, maybe Friday, distraction. So just do something with Hayden. Exercise, so you can really enjoy clear your head. Exercise maybe in the morning early, so you can enjoy your beers as well. You deserve your beers. But then I would plan your day. You know, don't get out of Wembley Central and try and find a pub. Know where you're going for your pre-match refreshments. Maybe, I know you're getting a late train back, so maybe even book a little area or a little table somewhere back in central London. So you've got a nice experience to look forward to, and you're not going to be like stood like a sardine trying to get on the Bakerloo line after a penalty shootout defeat with a warm can. Do you know what I mean? take some glory out of the day. And do you know what? Just be a little bit balanced. If it doesn't happen, you've had a brilliant season, I suppose.
All right, I'll go for that. And of course, the key thing is not to buy any food or drink at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
Because I'm not in a position to remortgage my house at this juncture. Right, we'll be back on Monday when we'll run down those two playoff finals. Don't know, might be through floods of tears, might be through tears of joy, might just be through calm acceptance that comes with age. Probably not, though. Good luck to everybody, Forest, Huddersfield, Port Vale and Mansfield in those finals. Do enjoy them, listener, and join us again on Monday when we'll talk through them all. Many thanks for your company today, and to Adrian, to Sam, to Abby and to David Priest too. We'll catch up with you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @thetotallyshow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.